Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Man on the Mic podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Mann. This podcast is dedicated to honest discussions that inspire, connect, and bring out the best in our guests. Now let's get started with the show. Here's your host, Jeffrey Mann.
I guess the first thing I initially want to talk to you guys is, and we'll just dive right in here. I tell people, for me, nothing's off limits. So anything you don't want to say, that's fine. But for you guys, what has your experience been like being a minority in Utah?
It's been normal in some aspects. You know, you get the stare. You know, when I first moved out here, I wasn't used to that because I was used to seeing just a whole range of people.
Yeah.
Black, Mexican, white, occasional Indian, some Asian people, you know, but the one thing I just wasn't used to was people just staring and looking at me. And I'm just like, what? This is real. What you looking at, man? Like, what? But overall, I mean, everyone I've had experience with has been pretty good. You know, everyone is genuinely, honestly, just trying to get to know you. You know, I think some people say things that are ignorant, but I don't think they mean it in a malicious way.
Yeah.
You know, and so I try to approach people first of saying, hey, do you got a question? Are you trying to learn? Are you trying to understand more? Or are you just downright not wanting to learn or and yeah. try to be nosy?
Exactly.
Be all in the business. But
yeah.
But overall, it's been good for me.
Okay. So let me add one more layer. What has the experience been like being Black and or a minority in Utah, but also being LDS?
Mine's probably different from Andrew's.
Okay.
Just a little, you know what I mean? Because here, it's like, I'm from Arizona, and Arizona is like Utah. I say it's Utah back in 1980s when it was good. You know what I mean? People in Arizona don't like Utah, right? So I dealt with the church there and everything like that. But being here in Utah was a whole different culture shift for me. Even growing up in the church, you know what I mean? It was, if I wasn't, if they had to know that I had a testimony, like I had to go through some prerequisites and then, oh yes, you know what I mean? You can. So I had given experience when we went into this new ward and, you know, people were friendly, but we just went to church and then came home,
yeah.
Went to church and came home. Then the bishop asked, hey, would you like to say a prayer? And I was like, oh yeah, I'll say the prayer. Once I said the prayer, then people are like, hey, I have sons the same age as your sons. They can come over. Like it was, oh man, that guy has a spirit. Okay, he's okay. He's okay, you know what I mean? And yes, I felt that throughout, you know, growing up even in Arizona as well. It wasn't until I went on a mission when I had the tag, when it was, that was the label that they could instantly see where I was treated, right? Like,
yep.
Do I want to say regular? I don't know. I mean, it was how I thought I always should be treated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As even in the temple, the way we're treated in the temple is amazing.
Yeah.
That should be the same outside of the temple. You know what I mean? So yes, it was just culture shift and whatnot. But I think for myself, being here in Utah, it actually opened me up that I don't care anymore about what people think, because I already know, right? It's my relationship with the Savior and whatnot. So I don't look at the stairs. I just keep moving.
Yeah.
I know there was a lady that, I'll finish with this. There was a lady, as I was going somewhere, she was like, I was getting out of my car. She was coming with her daughter like this. And then I just jumped. And then hit my key fob to turn on my car alarm, right? And she's like, I'm not gonna scare you. I was like, just making sure. You know what I mean? And just went on my way so that she could feel the same way, because I could see it in her eyes that it was about to happen that way. So all in all, that's what it is.
Okay.
I have one more thing on too about the culture thing. I have experienced that. It's where they wait until, or they ask you, did you serve a mission?
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
You got married.
And then like the whole vibe changes a little bit.
The walls go down.
Yeah, the little walls go.
Conversation changes.
Yeah, the vibe just turns down. And hey, you want to go golf? You want to do something together? Or Yeah, or they hear you pray, or you bear your testimony at church, and then that's that vibe. They're just like, I just want to know how committed is he to the gospel, or to just to get your understanding of what level you're at, you know? And I think definitely sometimes the vibe changes on that.
Well, and it's interesting. So I'm adopted. My parents are white. They live in St. George. And it's so interesting when I go down there. I actually hate going to my parents' ward because it's older white people. And I remember I'm sitting there next to my parents, and this old woman, my mom, she's the sweetest. The old woman comes up to me and she's like, you know, I just love your people. I did my DNA test and I have 1% black. You know, they always hit you with that. And then she looks at me and she's like, but you know who I don't like? I don't like zipper heads. And walks away. And so that's what I thought. And I said to my dad, and so we Googled it. So during World War II, when they would run with the World War II or Vietnam, whatever, when they would run over the Asians with the Jeeps, the tracks on the body looks like a zipper, and they would call them zipper heads. And I'm sitting there, and everyone in the world, this is the sweetest old lady. This old lady racist. But you know, but it's just whether it's an age thing or a generational thing. I mean, I used to wash windows, and I was in a supermarket in Pleasant Grove, and one of the old dudes came up to me and he said, well, because there was fingerprints, he's like, they can't keep their cotton picking hands off of the glass. You know, and these are phrases they're used to saying. Yeah, right,
right. My grandpa said that, but still, it's just like...
because my coworker was like... And luckily, I had known, you know, this is what old people say and everything, but I feel like it's just... It's a huge adjustment. You know, I've gone to church in New Orleans, and I'll tell you what, I would never miss a Sunday in New Orleans. The paintings are different. The way you feel welcome are different. It's just, I feel like for me, there's no judgment. There's no appeal to dress up or have to be, you know, the best dressed person there. But just looking at everything on the walls, and the paintings are just multicolored. I'm like, for any kids, and they see people that look like them on the walls versus the churches we have here in Utah. Because I came back and went to Sunday next week, church the next week here, and I'm like, every painting is a Caucasian. There's no diversity or anything. And I even sent a picture in my family chat. I said, why can't our churches in Utah look like this? You know, one of the ladies, one of the Bonner daughters is in that ward in New Orleans, and at baptisms, they're singing gospel, a whole different thing. And my buddy's like, our hymn book is boring. You know? And so it's interesting when you get to travel outside and see other cultures and how LDS people are in different states. And then you come back here. I'll be honest, I love Utah. I love it. I've changed the game. You know, kids used to say to me years ago, you know, good luck on your football game tomorrow, a great game last night, and assumed I played. Right. And that's why I got into personal training. Because I realized I have a group of parents who will never ask what I played, what I did, what I know, but how I look would send their kids to me. And so I took this thing that used to annoy me, and I'm like, I'm going to make money off it. And ran a gym for 9 years and made really good money. And I'm like, if you're going to assume, I'm not going to correct you. And just use that. And then when I fast forward to my career right now, I do public relations and marketing, and I travel with a bunch of influencers, and everyone thinks I'm their bodyguard. And so if you look in my backpack, I now carry a fake earpiece, and I wear all black because I'm like, if they're going to assume that, now I can go backstage anywhere. Yeah, right. I'm like, you can assume what you want. I'll put the earpiece on. Let's go. But so I started to lean in. Exactly. And I started to lean into these stereotypes, whatever they wanted to assume. And I'm like, how can I use it to help my career, my life go forward, rather than just sit there and be pissed the whole time?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it definitely takes a mindset shift coming here, especially out of state from a different place, and seeing how the church is where you're at. And coming here, so for me, like, I have had great experiences. I can't complain about what I've experienced since being here and being a member. And part of that is because of the mindset shift. Like, I've separated being here in Utah into like three categories. There's like the LDS community, there's the LDS culture, And then there's the Utah culture. Mm. And so for me, it's like, all right, I understand people here in Utah are not used to other cultures being here. I mean, it's a pioneer state, you know, for what we know. And there's, as far as outsiders coming in and bringing their piece of their culture to here, they're just not used to it. So Andrew mentioned like addressing it. Sometimes they address it in the most ignorant ways. It's like, all right, I don't know, like, are you just not, don't know how to communicate what you're trying to express or ask me, or is it that you're just somewhat prejudiced? Yeah. So for me, I have an open mindset about it, understanding that's the Utah culture. And the LDS culture, I just stick as close as I can to what the Lord has expressed, how we should be as individuals, and I just leave it at that. In the LDS community, I've had, you know, great experiences. I was a little bit wary when I moved back here from California, and we moved, we're in Bountiful, and Bountiful is just like, I don't know if y'all been in Bountiful, but it's pretty isolated. It's kind of like its own community, a little bit older in terms of a community. But then being in that ward that we were in, and they called me to be a member of the bishopric, I was thrown off. I was like, told my wife, I'll probably be the first black member of the bishopric ever, like, in this ward.
And you're conducting every week.
Like being established. But, like, unfortunately, I wasn't able to fulfill that calling because we were literally moving. We moved to West Jordan like 2 weeks, 3 weeks later. So I had to deny it. But from that experience, I was like, oh, okay, so they are open-minded. You know what I'm saying? Like, being the only minority in the ward at the time. And it just kind of helped me appreciate just the sense of the LDS community outside of what the LDS culture could be.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, because this is one thing that I've always struggled with, because as minorities, shaving is a whole different ballgame of itself. If you go into a calling where you were called as a bishop, would you feel the need to be clean shaven?
I mean, I would. I'm always willing to do what the Lord would want me to do. If I'm like a counselor and not there, like, hey, you don't have, like, I'll keep myself clean, you know, but if I don't have to shave, I won't shave. But like, if I'm serving as the bishop, or like I've served in temple positions, like, I'll shave. I'll do clean shaving and meet the standard. You know, I personally don't feel pressure to do that.
Yeah, I have a thought on that. So I served in the temple. I had to shave. I hated that. It took me 6 years to get this. You know what I'm saying? So I was mad when I had to actually cut it off. But I have a, and I'm in Spanish Fork, by the way. So I have, in my last ward before our ward split, the bishop, he has a goatee and he's rocking it.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't care. He's very just down to earth, too. So in my opinion, I don't know, it's more of a cultural thing, a normalized thing. I mean, but, I think you should just stay clean shaven if you're staying lined up and keeping your stuff not all scruffy and all that.
I'll keep mine fresh.
And yeah. Yeah. I think if you take care of yourself like that, you're fine, you know, but, I don't know if you have just this curly Q, this thing going on here and mustache, crazy stuff. I think that's where it is, the lion's cut. But if you're keeping yourself clean shaven.
Well, and this is just my opinion. People may not agree with me. My thing is, like, I cannot stand that they allowed the mustaches and not beards, because I'm like, that kid looks like a pervert with the petty stash. You know what I'm saying? But not looking at you, that person over there. But I'm always like, a clean beard looks way better than that nasty mustache. Yeah, and it's actually interesting. A year ago, I went to go work in the Provo Temple, and they said, you have to be clean shaven. And I said, no. But the new Orem Temple that opened up, the temple president there, I saw him at the gym every day, and he came and had a conversation with me. He said, you can have a beard and work. He said, it's up to the temple president to decide the standards. And I told him, I'll be at your temple 5 days a week. You let me keep this. But it was interesting having him tell me that, because I always thought this is the standard across the board. But he, once he said that, I was like, okay, now I'm curious to why. Like, my mom was like, going to the St. George Temple, I'm like, I want you to ask the temple president if someone with a beard could work there. And if not, why? Because I've never felt like my facial hair makes me any different level of faith testimony. Right. I mean, I've known kids who are clean shaven. They look like the perfect model, white shirt, tie, but they're addicted to porn. And I'm like, Just because they look a certain way doesn't mean what's inside is truly there. And, you know, for me, I've always felt like that facial hair should be the least of our worries. It's not going to save us. It's not going to keep, you know, it's not going to destroy us. What is the things that matter on this earth? And if we're focusing on what my face looks like, then we're missing the whole important part.
I wonder if it's because if someone, you give someone an inch, they take it a mile.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hey, if you got a mustache, some people are going to just get the nasty.
Mm-hmm. You'll get that Rick Ross beard.
or the Rick Ross beard or the Anthony Hamilton, not scruffy, not connected beard, you know? So it's just like, I feel like people, they always try to test the waters. I mean, when I was a missionary, like we would have ties, we would try to just do something different.
Yeah.
And so people would just always do something outrageous just to try to be different. And people just sometimes just take advantage of it.
It could just be one of them things too, where it's just ingrained in the church culture, something they're used to. And then, never question it. It was a standard and it just continued through the years. Because when I was on my mission, we were teaching this brother named Damien, and they wanted him to be in the branch presidency, but he didn't want to cut his dreadlocks. He had dreads. And now, same situation, you can be in the presidency and have dreadlocks. So it's just probably one of them things where it was part of the church culture and just through time, like change and acceptance.
Policy over doctrine.
Yeah. Policy over doctrine. Most definitely.
You think you can ever have your hair longer, or you got to be?
Hey, you can have a blue shirt now, so.
Yeah.
That's true.
I did ask to a mission president, so he's like, yo, that's a little long. What you doing?
I could see it changing. I mean, I honestly think, missions may drop from 2 years to a year and a half. I feel like there'd be like time frames you could choose. Because I know some kids, if you told them a year.
Oh, yeah, you'd have 100,000.
Uh-huh. And then you got, you know, then you got the kids who want to stay 5 years.
Yeah.
Like we had these kids in my mission, President, can I extend? I'm like, go home. What are you, you've been with a dude for 2 years, go home, change it up.
That's true.
So I'm curious for you guys. Have you guys, I'm assuming you guys have attended the Genesis group. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like? I've been once, and John, by the way, was the speaker when I went, which was interesting to walk in, and he was, exactly. But, you know, it was fun. But I'm curious to what you guys' experience with that was, but also, is that something that should be done more than just once a month?
Well, we had every barbecue, right, Ray?
Yeah. Me and Isaiah, we there every barbecue and every Christmas.
Every Christmas.
No, I will say I knew about Genesis. Being in Arizona, I knew about Genesis before. And I was always like, okay, when I go up to Crumfus, I'm going to go to Genesis. It was something to be with. Like the conversation that we have here and then how we could laugh and joke. And then get spiritual, laugh and joke. Spiritual. Uh-huh. That's culturally something that you won't see in an English speaking ward, right? So going to Genesis, like I took my son and, you know, they were singing gospel songs and clapping. And I see my son start clapping and feeling it, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, wow, that's like those little culture, those little culture gems are why Genesis is so important. Like, look, I go to a Tongan ward. I'm half Tongan. They moved it from English, from a language speaking ward to a cultural ward. So in my ward right now, we have Balangi families that, you know, don't have any ties to Tongan. We have a Dominican family. There's a Black family in our ward. There's an African family in our stake. It's because, you know, getting together with minorities, you're like, hey, like I don't know you, but I know we have some of the some of the stories that you shared. I have the same stories. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's whenever you see, like, when I saw these guys, I'm like, we all went on missions. You did, and this happened. Yeah, this happened to me. It's those things to be like that can culturally root us to the gospel because of Genesis and you know, Black culture meshed up and whatnot.
So then I guess my follow-up question would be is, why is there not more about Genesis out there? Because I know most of the Black guys I know in Utah have no clue what it is. Like even Ty, I sent it to him. I said, we should go up. He's like, I had no clue it ever exists.
Yeah.
That's right. I was just going to say, yeah, I have mixed feelings. I think the mixed feelings are, like, because I went to Genesis as a kid, you know. So from 8th grade all the way up until, like, 10th or 11th grade. It was a cool experience. You know, Alex Boyer was there during that time, and Darius Gray, and it was a really cool experience, you know. And I think it's needed, but I would like to see that in the wards, you know. And so that's where my mixed feelings are. It's like, man, we have this separate ward, but it would be sick to see more Black bishops, more Black counselors, more Black elders quorum leaders, or just the diverse, because that's what our church is, and that's the way our church has been for, you know, centuries. And we've always been excluded out of that picture.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm kind of mixed, even though I feel like it's a good, you know, thing that's happening and can really bring people closer together. I'm like, man, but, like, we should be doing this in our wards, you know?
So if we were to go, let's go above the ward level, because I've always wondered, is the church as a whole ready for the first Black apostle?
Probably not.
Because I've always had the fear. I'm like, there's going to be a lot of people who leave if that were to happen.
I think so. I mean, why not? Like, the church is international. I mean, there's apostles right now that are Asian and German, like, from different countries. So why not have an African-American apostle? Like, the church started or was restored here in America, and Africans were a big part of this country's growth, you know, and some of the most prominent members that we know from speaking with Paul Rees, or faithful members anyways, they were African-American. They helped pioneer the way. So why not? And why wouldn't the church be ready if we are also seeking to fulfill President Nelson's most recent counsel is to root out all racism?
Yeah.
You know, why not have a Black apostle? Like, and who knows? You mentioned a lot of people may leave. Well, let them leave. Like, that's a part of the sifting, right? Right. Yeah. Separating the wheat from the tares. People are going to leave for whatever reasons. If they're not rooting in the Lord, then I bless their hearts. You know,
that's a strong thing he said, like, rooted in the Lord. Like all these things can be charged, and you know, right now we live in a world where, before, when I was growing up, it was the age of information, right? And at that time it was encyclopedia books, right? Now it's the age of references and sources. You know what I mean? You got to check your sources. So there's all this information out that can come up that is right here, right? But it's only through the Spirit that can navigate through those, through all that craziness. So if there's a Black apostle, I'll still be here. If there's not, I'll still be here. I'm still following the Lord. You know what I mean? So it's like, next life, doesn't matter if we are Black or white or anything like that. The reason why it's so charged right now is because we have to find a way to be united. Will sent me something that one of the apostles spoke about, being united, right? But not really discussing like diversity. And so we were both looking at this talk like, okay, what does that mean? What is, like, okay, yeah. We can all be different. We are all different, right? Right. We are all different, but we're all united in one purpose, is to turn to God, to turn to the Savior, right? Because we'll all get the same blessings that were promised to Nephi, to Alma, everything like that, regardless of who we are. We can celebrate differences and no differences. Like, we want that. We wish that. We just talked about at the beginning of this, like, dang, going to a ward, going through an interview first before everybody can see. But if everybody can see, and I'm going to bring this up again, like, if in the temple you can come up to me, embrace me like your brother, but that's not the same thing in at Macy's, you know what I mean? That's like, then we're missing the whole purpose of why the temple, because that person chose to look at the differences as opposed to say the similarities is we're all sons and daughters of God.
Yeah.
We're regardless. So if that doesn't bring us closer unity that way, then we'll never, then we can never fulfill that in the next life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not in the next life we're going to be like this. Yeah. Oh man, we're all happy. No, you will still have the same tendencies.
Yeah.
That's what's beautiful. You still have the same choices. God doesn't take away your agency.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because of the differences we have is that we need to be united, because
yeah,
we all have the same purposes to be together forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are my thoughts.
That's huge. I agree completely. I think, and personally for me, lately I joined a men's coaching group, and there's, you know, 49 other guys in the group. I'm the only black guy in the group. But it's a group where I don't feel judged. Mm. I feel like I can call on any of them for anything in the world. I can share my deepest thoughts and emotions with these guys. And it's the first time I've had outside of... So anyone of color that I meet, I can be comfortable with them instantly.
Yeah.
This is the first time people don't look like me. I can be comfortable with them. I can sit down over a dinner and I can just be me, and not have to have a persona or anything. I always, you know, living in Utah County, I always felt like I had to have this mask on and live a certain way, interact with people a certain way. You know, I drove a truck. I had a, what do you call these things, Clayton? You would know. I had like these antlers hanging from my rear view. I've never hunted a day in my life, but I knew, you know, there's certain things that you know, that they would see, and they would be fine. And I had the system, if I ever got pulled over, I would accidentally hand them either my temple recommend or my Eagle Scout card first. Oh, sorry, wrong one. Oh, you're fine, sir, go ahead.
Go on your way.
But I had, like, I literally, in my Santa console, I have a fake pair of glasses. Like, I keep my temple bag in, like, the back seat, because I could literally be like, I'm late, I was on the way to the temple. Like, I have this whole system in place, and, you know, so they would become comfortable with me. And I finally, in the last month, I'm like, why? There's no reason to have a mask or a persona. If someone's going to dislike me, they're going to dislike me.
Mm-hmm.
But that one person dislikes me, there's two other people who like me. And those are the people I'm going to choose to be around and to focus my energy on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess, a sign of relief to find a community of people that I'm completely different from. I mean, the guy who's I'm probably close with in the group, we rode down the Moab together for the opening ceremony. Bald dude, tattoos. His nickname is literally KKK. His friends call him Grand Wizard. But this man calls me every day, Jeff, how are you? How's the family?
Hey, come down.
I'm not going to his house. He's
why
down to a drink.
Grand Wizard?
So I don't know what he said. That's my nickname. But literally, I had known him for three days, and we were so comfortable that he, because I'm like, there's no way you just be telling black dudes, hey, yo, my nickname, Grand Wizard. And I'm like, had you told me before we had this experience, I'd be the farthest from you. You know, and I even told him when we rode down to Moab, I was so ingrained on the way he looked, I played country music. Halfway down, as we got talking, got more comfortable, I started to shift to some rap music. And he started singing along and everything. And it was so interesting to see, before I got comfortable, I had to assume, based off looks, here's the music that he would like, so he would be so comfortable, rather than just be me and, hey, this is what I like. You're in my car, we're listening to it, whatever. You know, and then last week, I went to the Midwest, went to Missouri. And I had looks that not Utah looks. But like, I got out of the car, and my buddy's like, do you see that old dude? This old dude in the truck was just standing. I'm like, I'll wait in the car. I'm just, this small town, farms everywhere. But the experience I had there is so my buddy went and showed me where the LDS church is, but he invited me to go to his church with him. And I walk in and, you know, the drums are going, the music, but people are in shorts and sandals. And I'm like, because I'm like, I don't have to wear a white shirt and the suit and dress up and everything. But, and so there was this level of, I'm comfortable, you know, and it was a good message. It was nothing, you know, terrible. And I'm like, I can still learn something from this. But also it was 45 minutes and I was like, I could do 45 minutes every Sunday.
Like Sunday countdown.
Well, and you know, my hard thing is like in a few weeks, I'm the most less active I ever am. I have to be honest. Once football starts, I'm watching. I don't miss games. I'll go take the sacrament and then I'm back because I got to. And they threw a pick right when I got to church, so I got to make myself back. But it's interesting to see. And I don't know if it's a Utah thing, but I feel like there's a fear of people who look different, but there's also a fear of things that are different.
Yeah.
Even there's like this reaction to even different religions. It's like no other religion can be good because, you know, while this is the true church and the gospel and everything, you can still get good from every other religion.
Right.
But something within this culture teaches us that just focus on your religion. All these other ones are awful. And I'm like, just go attend.
Yeah. Don't see.
Go understand. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Muslims are the most one of the most dedicated religions for what they go through and everything. And I'm like, we complained about having on Fast Sunday when you can't eat for a few hours and you smell that roast in the crock pot. Right. And then you look at what they, the amounts that they fast and their dedication to prayer and how many times they pray a day. And I have friends who, you know, they only pray if they need something. If they need money or they need help with the bill, then they'll pray. But they would never just pray to say thank you. And so that's one of the biggest culture things I've seen is, and I'm curious with you guys, is what is it about other religions that just don't mesh?
I think you said it right. Just the differences. Like growing up here in Utah and also out of Utah, Indianapolis, Georgia, I think people get comfortable here. You know, and that's why we see so much. I don't know the stats. There's not really clear stats out there, but I would bet that there's way more saints that leave the church here than other states because of how comfortable and convenient it is. And I was actually having that same conversation with my brother, who was a member of our church but converted to Islam, and his dedication to pray 5 days. I was humbled. I was like, man, I can't even say one kneeling prayer in the morning, you know? And so I had to repent and was like, okay, like we claim to be the true church, but do we live up to those standards like you were saying, Ray? Like, do we bring ourselves above the world or are we still at the world's level? And I think that's the biggest issue is like we get too complacent and too comfortable with what we have.
Yeah. I served my mission in West Africa, and the amount of families that would save up to go to the temple or have to travel days or hours to get to a temple. And then I sit in Utah, and we have a temple on almost every corner, and you don't see the same desire. I'm like, you can drive 5 minutes and be at a temple, but they choose, you know, either they choose not to or we get too lazy or we get too comfortable, and I'm just like, it, you know. You don't have to go do a session every time you go do baptisms.
Right.
But it's always been shocking to me when there's so many around us. And I look at the effort and the struggle that families in other countries have to go through to get to a temple for maybe one time in their life. They may never go again. And I just, you know, it's hard when you look at what gets taken for granted, especially here in Utah. When I got back from my mission with a buddy from Heber, he's adopted African-American. And when we got back, we decided to go to Chuck-O-Rama for the first place to eat. And we broke down, had a panic attack, because you go from a country where people have almost no food to the amount of food being wasted and it just being piled up. And we just sat there and we were just shocked at, you know, the waste and what people take for granted here in Utah. And it's always been interesting to me. I've lived in Africa 7 years of my life, and a lot of that culture is ingrained on me. And so it's always a different, I guess, I look at Utah differently. I look at people differently. And I almost hold people to a higher standard. Because I'm like, you have it so easy.
Right.
You know, you kids, I'm like, you can drive 30 minutes and be at General Conference and go attend and don't know if you guys have done this, but every general conference, I'll tell my mom to call the state president, and I say, use these exact words, my black son would like to go to conference, and I've never not got tickets. I've gotten 4 tickets every session. And I told my mom, I said, use that. You have to use that phrase, my black son. Because once he's like, oh my gosh, yes. Wonderful. We'd love to have him. Well, so when I was at Utah Valley, they called my dad before and they said, hey, we know you have black kids. Would they want to attend a Young Singles Adult Devotional? Make sure they're early. And I would sit front row. And because they knew that camera has to pan and hit something. I mean, you guys see it when they pan over the choir.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's always one or two minorities, but then you never see that same minority ever again. Well, Alex Boyer, you saw him all the time.
But see, that's a part of our mission, you know, as a podcast.
Right.
Is we want to normalize the black experience in the church. We don't want to have to feel they're going the extra mile to accommodate us. We want to be treated just as equally and well-formed as everyone else. So the fact that you mentioned, tell your black son, and then you get that,
that extra
treatment push. I mean, it's great, yeah. But it's like you said, it should just be my son, you know, and we should get that equal accommodation. And so that's something we're hoping to do, you know, with the platform that we have is just to get it out there. It's very early. But get it out there and create an environment, church culture, where we're not looked at or seen or have to be accommodated any differently than the next person.
Right. It's normal to see 5-6 black men at the temple or at church, or see multiple black people attending any church function. You know,
yeah.
We can get more brothers in the temple, more brothers at church. I mean, I think that can change the overall culture and the way people approach us, because it's normal. It's not, wow, this is a spectacle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Like something's about to go down.
You guys experienced that same thing during when everything happened with George Floyd and we had the protests happening in Salt Lake. I've never had more. I was at Cafe Rio, yes. And the dude in front of me, hey man, let me buy your food. Like every day it was grocery store. Let me help you find your groceries. I had dudes I hadn't talked to in 5 years. Yo, Jeff, if I was ever racist, I want to just apologize. Yeah. Like it was.
My DM was flooded.
You know what I'm saying? It was the most crazy experience of my life, because it was like, I get what you guys are doing, but you're actually making it worse.
Mm.
Like, just treat everybody normal. That's all we're asking for, not special treatment.
Yeah.
I feel like some people take advantage of that, though, and so we all have to. Not all of us, but there's a lot of people who take it and they become victims.
Uh-huh.
You know, I feel like there's a healthy balance of, yeah, we understand that some things happened and that was an unfortunate event.
Yeah.
But Some people just milk it, bro.
Well, my part I was frustrated with is like I was watching the news up in Salt Lake. I'm like, there is more white women out there screaming and hollering. Like, all the black people I knew were not there.
True. Sunday morning when the riot thing happened in Salt Lake, I was thinking the same way. I was like, look, man, we're like, they're portraying us that we're all the same and whatnot. I was like, here, I'm gonna do something different. I'm gonna go down there and go clean up. I took my son. My son is, he's 7 at the time. I take him down there, and there's the National Guard's there with tanks and everything like that. And then we're going to go help clean graffiti. We see this white couple. They have a bag of water, and I go like this. Hey, what are you guys doing? They look, and they're like,
right.
We're giving out waters to the police. Hey, we want to come join you. Then they're like, oh, okay. So we join them. We're passing out waters to the police officers who are out there navigating and whatnot. And then we're just talking about things. And she had some She had some adopted brothers who were black, and they got pulled over because she's white. You know, her three brothers are black in the car driving. She's younger, and they got pulled over, and the cop is like just talking to her like, "Hey, are you okay?" He's like, "Yeah, these are my brothers," but the cops overshadowed that. So we got to talk about differences and compromise. We both learned that day. They had like three bottled waters left, and they had to go. I was like, "Oh, we'll pass these out," and you know the cops are giving my son stickers and whatnot. When they left,
whole different.
Yeah. Whole different thing. We see another cop, and we're on this high, like, hey, yeah, let's go up. We went to go take the cop. Cop's like this. I was this thing. I'm like, whoa. He's just giving you water. You know what I mean? And then so my son saw this, and I'm just like, man. So we give him the water. We go, and then now there's news people out there. Now who is everybody interviewing? Trying to interview me, right? And I'm just like, no interviews. This is not one of those things. But just from that experience of just going through that, and then you know taking my son to that, I got chewed out by my wife of that because I took my son down there to this hostile situation. But I was just moved to. I mean, just what Andrew said. It was just like, yes, this was a horrific event, and there's, you know, just a lot of things that are charged at the moment. This was a way that I could, you know, de-escalate the situation. But in being in that, to try to de-escalate the situation, like you were changing the radio station and whatnot, I put myself in danger.
Yeah. You know. Well, and I'm like, y'all think black people are crazy. When that old white dude pulled out the bow and arrow and went to shoot someone, I was like, ain't no black dude ever going to shoot no one with a bow and arrow in the middle of public. And the crazy thing is, the way, and they let him just, I was like, I've never seen anything like that.
Wow. I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Wow. Well, when they flipped the police car too. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, I mean, it was like...
I was at my buddy's.
Defeating the whole purpose. Uh-huh.
Hey, exactly. Well, and I was balancing. You know, my dad loves to get involved with stuff, so he went to a protest down in Vegas, and I was like, Dad, you're an old white dude, so if someone gets crazy and attacks you because they don't know you're supporting them, like you should not be. If you're with me, that's fine.
Right,
but right. He went by himself and had my mom park. And when things got crazy, he jumped in the car. And I'm just like, don't put yourself in that situation.
Bro, don't even be there.
I got a question for you. What would you tell other people who are adopted, who are of color, and then they're adopted to white family? What would you tell the white family? Like,
so I helped run an adoption camp in Denver for 7 years. It was kids adopted from Africa, Haiti, the Caribbean, and then African-American kids. And the biggest thing for... One of the biggest lessons I first taught the parents was find them a barber or someone that can braid the girl's hair. Yeah.
Right.
Because that changes the whole way the kid feels. I mean, my parents used to take me to, like, Great Clips.
Right.
And, you know...
Rainbow hair.
Yep. Yep. Well, this girl shaved my brother half his head one time and started crying. I can't do this. So he had half his fro gone. Other side was still there. And so that's the big thing. First thing is find somewhere for they get the haircut. The other thing is, and this is a big thing in Utah, is treat your kids normal. So parents would move and try and find coaches that were black, piano teacher that was black. Like they had to shift everything to put them all around these black faces. And I'm like, you're changing the environment for these kids. If you would just treat them normal, they'd be comfortable.
There'd be a safe in there.
Yeah, exactly. The other balancing act is telling the principals and teachers these are normal kids. So one of the kids, the principal every day would come out and hug the kid. The only kid he would hug. And he would come and every single time. And I'm like, now you know you're isolating him from all of the other...
Segregated part of
all the other kids. I get the principal's intention may be good,
right.
But you're making it worse because now the other kids are seeing this, the kid is experiencing this. So really it's about, you know, finding something that's normal and keeping them in the environment. The other thing is help those kids understand their culture, but don't force it on them.
Yeah, right.
So they want to understand black culture, that's good, but they don't like, you know, I'd meet parents who named like their daughter Rihanna or like going all out to give them all these black names. And I'm like, it's just a kid. It doesn't have to be this big project or anything. And then you don't have to also push the kid to play sports because he's black. As your kid gets older, what do they want to do? Everything, because football, go play.
I mean, unless you walk around 6'10" and you playing video games all day, bro, you gonna play shoot a ball? Yeah, huh? You at least try.
Lace those shoes.
You better get on the court, boy.
No. Well, but then the other side is you see some of these black kids who are adopted when they get into sports, they are so clumsy, yeah. And it's almost worse. Because they were never taught how to do anything. The fundamentals of that. And, and then the other balancing act, like my dad, when he adopted us, he had to start watching more football because a lot of adopted parents are older.
Right.
And so, they're not going to be throwing the football outside with the kids because they've either raised kids before or they couldn't have kids. Now they're a lot older and it's different for them to go do those physical activities and different things. I lucked out because we moved to Africa twice when I was a kid. And my mom did all the black kids in Boise, Idaho. She'd bring over to the house and she was doing, black history stuff at the elementary school and really pushed all of that. Wow. And, one of our best friends' dad played in the NFL. And so he's the one take him to this barbershop and, found these different things. But, for me, it's being able to share the black culture with the kids, whatever culture they're from, but also let them live a normal life. And let them choose what they need to do. If you met my brother, we're polar opposites. He's got the tattoos and the piercings and, he won't ever listen to country music because he's got ingrained, this is how a black person should act and what they should do, and he's left the church. And I mean, we were born 3 hours apart, but we're polar opposites. And so really it's like, what does this kid enjoy to do? And then support him in that. And then guide him in that. But also, find someone of color who's older who may be able to answer questions that you can't.
Have a friend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Cocoa butter.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, because, the ashiness on these adopted kids at the camp when they would first show up, I literally would keep cocoa butter, whatever, in my backpack, and I'd be like, listen. Because the elbows are the worst. The worst. Well, and then also, I don't know what it is, but it's also, they don't do the hygiene with the kids.
Right.
And I'm like, you gotta, this kid stink. You gotta, we gotta fix. They love that spray axe. And I'm like, let's shower. Let's do all of this. But, for me, it was an amazing experience because I'm losing them, but I can speak 6 of the African languages. And you had some kids who had just been adopted from Africa. And so being able to connect with them in their language or at least greet them or because they're thrust into this new thing where they're learning about adoption and they're not used to the food or the culture or anything or the music. And so being able to relate to those kids on their level, one of the things we did at the camp is we would do food from Ethiopia and stuff. So we would cater authentic food for the kids because I'm like, you don't need to force them to eat American food. You can have the option, but I also want them to have something that's comfortable for them. And then I think on the other side that was hard is there were some adoptions that the parents in Africa they didn't choose to adopt. The kid was taken, sold, and now the parents have the kid, but now the kids live in America a few years. Do you send them back to a village in Africa where they don't have running water, don't have electricity? Because now you're thinking about how much that will mess the kid up. The kid no longer knows the language. So he goes back to whatever community or tribe he was. He's going to be isolated from the group. He doesn't know how to, do the things that they do. And so some families, they'll go spend 5 months over there with the kid and then come back here and go back and forth. But it was hard for me because I'm like, but the kid doesn't really belong to you. But that's all the kid knows is this new norm. And so adoption, it's needed, but it's tough and it's delicate. And then when you add Utah culture, then when you add religion to it, it changes so many different levels. So many
dynamics in that. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. You broke that up. I meant, Utah culture and religion, because some people mix that up in media that it's all one thing. Like, we see shows that are coming out or movies or whatever. It's like Utah culture, but not necessarily.
Oh, I got to ask you guys a question then on shows coming out. What are you guys' thoughts on The Secret Life of Mormon Housewives?
I know one of the cast.
I know three of the girls in it.
Wait, you said you know someone in there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Dated in high school.
That's the first clip that's going out. I like that one right there.
I'm curious. Brooke Burkers.
We might have to do a watch party for that for episode one.
We really should though.
But I'm talking like cameras. Let's get the real reactions and stuff because I'm curious. Or we need to pitch a show on the real lives of Black Mormons in Utah.
We're low key thinking about doing a skit.
Wait, can you go
with that? Hey, don't be telling my man. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We can,
they can do this, white women. Yeah. Then we could. And it'd be way more entertaining, I promise.
Anybody would be expecting Black Mormons?
No.
We might get it.
Viral, man. Damn.
Right?
Oh, easily.
I mean, well, shoot. I mean, to answer your, you want to answer the question?
Yeah, wait. No, we gotta get an answer to this. You gotta give us something.
I think it's a product of the way kids were raised here. You know, like they're just finding themselves, and they're trying to express themselves, and they're breaking out of that Utah culture. Mormon culture, and me and my wife were discussing this yesterday because we have fasted testimony, meaning y'all know how it always gets out of hand, but we're talking about this, how like kids here, sometimes they'll hang on to their parents' testimony, and then as soon as they break out of the house, they realize that they never had a testimony. And so because of that, that can cause one or two things to happen. They'll go through deconstruction. You know, they'll start trying to figure out who they are, you know, and a bunch of things will arise. And then sometimes they'll come back, and then sometimes it'll just drive me further away from the church. But that's what I think. And seeing them and the person that I know on that show, I know that situation. They come from a very wealthy family.
Yeah.
And so they have always had it good and easy. And this person, you know, I remember her in high school saying, oh, I never wore the same clothes every day, you know, like I would switch clothes, you know, and so I know how easy she's had it. And so for her to come out and do this, I'm like, that's what she probably is.
Yeah.
The point you said about when they get out and then they don't know who they are. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's what's so important about. There's a difference between isolation and insulation, you know. So parents, or you're in Utah, you get isolated. You're surrounded by your culture. Everyone thinks the same. Everyone does the same thing. Come from a wealthy family. You've never seen anything different than what you're used to. But if you are insulating your kids, that's where they are exposed to different things. But they have protection around them, and if they see things that are different, they can still handle those things, react, and still be able to take care of themselves, not lose themselves in the business. You know, so it's very important. I think it's really, especially parents out here in Utah, like there's a difference between isolating your children and that's something I plan on trying to do with my kids, is giving them to be adapted or being able to see things that are different from what the norm is in Utah. But when they do see that, they still are able to hold the principles and know who they are, why they're here, and where they're going.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I think it's that balancing act of, I think a lot of people, when they move to Utah, things have been so strict that now when they get any little bit of freedom, they're going to run and try and do everything just because they're like, I can. Even if they don't really want to, it's that freedom of no one's telling me no. Yeah. No one's, you know, holding my hand. No one's monitoring what I do. And they just go and let loose and try all sorts of crazy stuff.
Right. It's we had a post shared by Andrew where he's talking about like a kite, and you have to have tension on the kite for it to soar, and with your children and whatnot. I think with church culture, I'm gonna call it church culture because the gospels. Been the same on how you raise children. Let's say, back in the day, parents raised their children on Old Testament standards, right? Like, we went to church as a family, straightened up, tie, everything's iron and stuff like that, and don't make a noise and don't make a sound, and you're going to church because to be viewed as a good family. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was based on that. You know what I mean? I find myself as a parent now, like, I'm not raising my children as such, but the reasons, like, and I'm going to give this to my wife because she's amazing at, if my kids asked, I'll say, let's go to church. Hey, everybody get up for church. Why do we have to go to church? You know what I mean? I'm almost trying to grab them, not, you know what I mean? But my wife sits back and talks to them. These are the reasons why we're going to church, so that we can feel the Spirit, so we can take the sacrament and all those things. My son may ask that every Sunday, but then it gets less and less in every Sunday, and then now he's getting up. My wife has that patience there. I was raised by action. Get up, let's go to church. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, lucky for me, leaving my comfort zone, going to college in another state, and my mom hassling me, where I had to pray before. I didn't pray before then if the church was true. It was told that it was true. Mm-hmm. So when I prayed and then felt the same feelings as if I was in my old ward, I was like, oh man, this is true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I got that testimony. I believe my children are more stronger than I was. Like they're getting more gems of the Spirit. And I'm calling gems because they go to primary, they go to, you know, they go to mutual. They're gonna be soon going on their mission. All these things, if they do all these things in a row, these are gems. The mission is the briefcase to hold that to get married in the temple. Does that make sense? Yeah. Everything that they do, they give talks. They go to these primary activities. They go to mutual to socialize and whatnot. Because this is preparing them to make those covenants in the temple. And I think my kids understand that now way before I did. You know what I mean? So it's with this show going on, yes, it'll get attention, but it'll just be like the Broadway show. You know what I mean? Where, you know, a lot of people are like, wait, is that how the Mormon people are? Or people who are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? So they'll do their own research, right? You know, they'll be like, whoa, wait, it's not like that. And then they, you know what I mean? Like every, you know, you're in PR, everything could lead back to the Savior.
There's pros and cons.
Right.
And that was one of the pros, because for me, the show is like, there's pros and cons. That's right. A pro. More people are going to hear about the church. More people are going to hear Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons. My thoughts are on the con, though, is just representation.
Yeah.
Because they're already, just in the clips that we've seen, making statements about what standards are or certain policies or commandments, and that's bad representation.
We're not all swingers.
We're not all swingers. You don't have to marry by a certain age, like, or commandments are guides. There's consequence. The Lord gives us commandments for a reason, and maybe we need to do a better job in the church, especially me now being a parent, of like learning from past examples.
Yeah.
Ray mentioned like being strict, sturdy to look a certain way, being led by the rod. No, like teach the commandments, but allow your children, like guide them along the way. Don't make it as forceful, but just say, hey, these are the commandments. These are the consequences if you do. These are the consequences if you don't. And this show is already, just in a little snippets, kind of put a bad representation. Oh no, this is what the Mormon church does. This is what was expected of me. And that's kind of just my whole feeling, is be who you are. Yeah. Like, yeah. Say you're a member of the church if you want to say you're a member of the church, but like, don't put your experiences and of what you felt representation of the church or the standards were as what it is, because it's not, and that kind of leads people astray of what their thought process is. Story.
I will say I am happy that there is no black people on the show, because if you had one black couple on there, that's the standard that would be set for all black Mormons, and that's what they would be taking. And I was like, y'all go do your thing. We can sit over here. I'm so happy. No, that's amazing. Well, gentlemen, I want to, in closing, I would love, if each of you were to be remembered for one thing, what would that be?
That I was a disciple of Jesus Christ, because that encapsulates everything from service and love, like no judgment. Like, I could judge that chair that is probably wobbly, you know what I mean, tighten it up a little bit, but it's not, I'm not judging another person. The only judgment I'm with another person is that, hey, you're a child of God, let's move forward. So just the disciple of Christ and just service and love.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to put all this in one like center, but hopefully by me sharing what I do can kind of put out. So I keep a journal. My boys are 6 and 4. And so I started a journal writing down daily actions, so that way I can have my boys know about me, personal things, but most importantly, the love I have for their mother. And I keep a journal so that way when I'm dead and gone, they can read about my life, the bads, the goods, the ups and downs. They can know that I was not a perfect person, but that I love God and I love their mother to the best of my ability, even though I wasn't, you know, perfect at it. So that way they can grow up and they can learn from me and from my experiences to be a better disciple, better husband than I was. So for me, it's just, I would want people to know that I am authentic and I thrive off of my imperfections. And I gladly share my imperfections because the Lord, by his atoning sacrifice, has created much change and is still creating much change in me. So I glory in the imperfections because it only brings glory to God because of the change that he creates over the period of my life. So I will hope people will see me as just a changed being, a person who is constantly being changed, and have a great love for God and for my family.
I want to say that people see me as the same person that was in the night that I am in the light. You know, I feel that I was a menace at one point in time in my life, and I've definitely taken a 180. You know, I want people to, who see me now, who've known me in the past, that I've made a change and that I am the same person. I am a new person. I am a new creature. That they know, hey, Andrew's consistent. He's not someone on one day and he's a different person on Friday or Saturday, or especially on Sunday. You know, I want to be that same person 24/7. And, especially just of what I believe in and live it. You know, you see that guy, Andrew Smith, that man's consistent in everything he does.
Yeah, I would say for me is just kind of, and it's hard, like what Isaiah was saying, it's hard to wrap it up into one thing, but man, I want to see all my brothers and sisters around the world make it back home. And if I can do anything to contribute to that, you know, I want to be a part of that. And I think, you know, I want people to remember me for, like, Will loved everybody, you know, just as, I mean, not as much as Christ, but like if you ever needed anything or ever, you know, wanted anything, I'm going to make sure that you have it, you know, even sometimes before I have it, you know. And so I just want people to remember, you know, my heart, and also just how much love I have for him. So
beautiful. Dope, man.
I'm going to say mine again because they were good. I'm just
playing. You, round two, you can go again.
I'm just kidding. No. What I was going to say is, like, because of this this podcast, I've gotten to grow because of what these gentlemen have said, and it's particularly because they are Black men, like because they know some of the struggles that I've been through. So like I've taken some things that he said, I'm like, oh yeah, and Andrew and Isaiah, I'm just like, wow, this is this podcast is not for me to glorify. Hey, I'm Black and I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but I really need this help as well. I need this camaraderie. I need this brotherhood. Just like how you asked earlier, why is Genesis important? Because I need to see somebody on my left and my right that they look like me.
Yeah. This podcast has honestly been more like a therapy session.
Oh, yeah.
And a mentorship. For like, honestly, all y'all have taught me so much and honestly inspired me to be better man, to be a better man and a better father, you know? We all got imperfections, but it's knowing that, hey, he's walked the same walk I've walked. Do you know what I'm saying? So it makes it worth it. Sure.
It's the beginning.
Yeah. Big things are coming, man.
Maybe.
It's an infant. I'm excited to see what you guys do. And any way I can support you guys, let me know.
Well, I appreciate you guys having us on the podcast, man. I mean, hopefully more people are exposed to what we're doing. Yeah. And we're trying to do some great things here, man. It's just a matter of time. That's it.
Thank you for tuning in to Man on the Mic. We appreciate you spending your time with us today. Remember, our podcast is available on all platforms, so you can listen anytime, anywhere. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated. New episodes drop every week. Until next time, keep the conversation going. And as always, stay true to yourself. Thanks for watching.